After spending our morning learning about space, learning about Mars, you should be warned, this is a really biology topic. It's talking about your colon and the stuff that's inside of it. Like, this is some biology here. Welcome. My name is Clay Carlson. I come to California from Trinity Christian College in the southwest suburbs of Chicago. I'm very conscious of the fact that to try to address this topic requires expertise in things like neuroscience and microbiology and molecular biology and biochemistry and anatomy and in physiology and theology. And I assure you, I do not have all those expertise. But I'm hoping that this room as a collective does. And so I look forward to any feedback or help you can give me afterwards. All right. I don't have a clicker. The theological truths put forward in Genesis and agreed upon by virtually everyone here make clear that we are made by God, we have an earthly component to us, and we are made to be relational, relating with God, with each other, and with the rest of creation. Given these theological assurances, some of the findings from the research exploring the human microbiota should have been expected. The incredible discoveries about the bacteria in our digestive tract and how they're able to shape our behavior affirms that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Moreover, part of what we think of as us is not really human at all, but more earthly. And we are so fundamentally relational that our very sense of self is dependent on balanced relationships with our surroundings. It has been well established and hinted at one of yesterday's workshops that an adult human carries 10 times as many bacterial cells than they do human cells. This rich population of microorganisms called the human microbiota. And the collection includes the little studied archaea, complex eukaryotic fungi, a large number of viruses, but is primarily populated by bacteria. In total, an adult's microbiota likely weighs as much as their brain and includes 150 times more genes than an individual receives from their mother and father. Essentially, every surface of the human body that has contact with the outside world harbors its own microbial community. The skin, nasal cavities, mouth, throat, and vagina are all colonized by vast and interconnected inhabitants that make up the microbiota of that bodily location. But the largest, most diverse, and most important microbial community is the microbiota which resides within the large intestine, the gut microbiota. Microbiota research has shown that we are no more individuals than a mountain is. And like the mountain, we are ecosystems, or even interconnected groups of ecosystems, each inhabited by populations living together in a strained but balanced harmony. Let us make humankind in our image indeed. I too am plural. And just as would be true on that hypothetical mountain, the organisms that live in different ecosystems on a human vary a great deal from location to location. We would expect different plant life above the tree line on the mountain than we would below it. The two different locations have different selective pressures that shape which organisms thrive their best. Likewise, the types of species that do well in the skin are not the same as those that do well in the gut. And the analogy continues. On the mountainside, the plants along the creek would have roots stopping erosion, therefore shaping the mountain itself. And in human beings, our microbes that live within us train our immune system, help digest our food, and fill our bloodstream with metabolites. Our health depends on the microbes within us. The development of this community-based organ is also quite extraordinary and highlights some of the many biological roles mothers have in the development of their children. The womb is at least traditionally thought of as being microbe-free, and this would indicate that before the breaking of the amniotic sac, humans would have no measurable microbiota. During pregnancy, a woman's body undergoes a series of hormone-induced changes. And one change that at first seems counterintuitive is that a pregnant woman will secrete glycogen into her vaginal cavity. Glycogen is a complex carbohydrate energy storage molecule. So by secreting glycogen into her vaginal cavity, a pregnant woman is essentially shedding potential energy. But a member of the vaginal microbiota that flourishes well in the presence of this new food source comes from the group Lactobacillus. In some women, the population of Lactobacillus explodes in the weeks before delivery. And as the population expands, so does their metabolic waste, including lactic acid. And the lactic acid lowers the vaginal pH to the point that many microbes and most pathogens cannot survive. And the presence of this robust population of lactobacilli means that for most babies, the initial colonizers for all of our different ecosystems will come from this group. In the first months after birth, all of an infant's various microbiota will resemble his or her mother's vaginal microbiota, including the gut microbiota, where this robust lactobacilli population helps the newborn digest mother's milk. Surely we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And then through nursing, a mother provides much more than just nutrition for a developing child. She also provides antibodies. The ability of the so-called naturally acquired passive immunity to protect against disease has long been understood. What's only more recently been appreciated is that some of the antibodies present in breast milk are actually trained by the woman's microbiota. At the internal surface of our colons, our bodies are constantly interacting with a large and ever-changing population of microbes. Any bacteria that interacts too aggressively, perhaps by pushing through the mucosa or even penetrating the tissue itself, will trigger an immune response, including the production of antibodies. And those same antibodies are in mother's milk. By nursing, a woman shares the antibodies that protect her digestive tract and uses those antibodies to shape the population being established in her child's intestines. The relationship between mother and child shapes the relationship between child and microbes. Our God, in his wisdom, gives awesome power to mothers to biologically impact their children. And this gift has been granted to every mother and child in human history and has only very recently been appreciated. The gut microbiota is somewhat stable by the time the child is 1 year old, but continues to develop and change throughout an individual's lifetime. Just like any larger ecosystem, older, more diverse ecosystems are more stable than younger ones with fewer species. But we shape our gut microbiota with every bite we take. The species that live in our guts are just those that are best able to live on the foods that we eat. For example, microbes from the group Bacteroidetes are very common in those that live in a Western lifestyle and are thought to be present in those that have a high-fat, high-protein diet. So the thought is that any long-term change in diet has the potential to shift our microbiota and change which species are able to grow best. And which species grow best in our gut matters for a lot more than just digestion. Microbes within the colon are able to impact neurodevelopment, psychology, and behavior through what has been called the microbiota gut-brain axis. For example, mice that are grown with no microbiota at all, so-called germ-free mice, show a number of behavioral abnormalities. Male mice that develop without a microbiota will explore new foods just like conventionally grown mice. However, when they encounter a novel mouse, they show marked social avoidance. Additionally, they spend nearly four times as much of their time doing repetitive self-grooming. While the neurological explanations for these observations are not yet understood, it is known that germ-free mice have reduced gene expression of the important brain growth factor BDNF, a brain-derived neurotrophic factor, in both the cortex and the hippocampus. The role of the gut microbiota in these behavioral conditions was confirmed by colonizing these germ-free mice with microbiota from conventionally grown mice. And when they did so, the newly colonized mice then self-groomed and socialized just like conventionally grown mice. These behaviors were caused by the lack of community in the colon. And these results indicate that microbes in the gut are able to affect gene expression and protein levels in the brain, causing changes in behavior. That the microbiota is able to influence the brain is clear, but how it does so is only starting to be understood. The gut microbiota is able to influence brain development and function through several interconnected mechanisms. One method occurs through the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is a major component of the parasympathetic nervous system and has roles in regulating the activity of most organs. Much of the vagus nerve is sensory, actually relaying information about the organs back up to the brain. Some of the effects on the microbiota require vagus nerve signaling. For example, one possible beneficial species of bacteria, or a probiotic, is able to decrease anxiety-like behavior in mice with changes in gene expression for GABA in multiple regions of the brain. GABA, or gamma-amyloid acid, is a key inhibitory neurotransmitter in mice. Both the behavioral and cellular changes observed in response to this probiotic are dependent upon vagus nerve signaling, because a vagotomy, or actually cutting of the vagus nerve, abolishes both changes. Results like these indicate that gut bacteria can influence the brain through the vagus nerve, but it's not the only mode of communication. The gut microbiota also produces a host of metabolites, or small molecules, that flood the bloodstream. As compared to conventionally grown mice, germ-free mice are missing about 100 different molecules from the blood and show significantly different changes in the levels of about 10% of every molecule in the bloodstream. Of particular importance are the short-chained fatty acids produced by the microbiota. The gut bacteria ferment otherwise non-digestible fiber in order to produce as an end product these short-chained fatty acids. These short-chained fatty acids, for example, butyrate, serve as an energy source for the epithelial cells lining the inside of our colon, providing our food with calories that our body with calories that would otherwise be unavailable for us. But the short-chain fatty acids, like butyrate, also can escape the colon. Much of the butyrate is absorbed through the portal vein and then removed by the liver, but some is able to make it to the bloodstream. And in mice, butyrate has been shown to strengthen the blood-brain barrier, lead to changes in histone acetylation patterns in the brain, and show substantial changes in gene expression for genes that are tied to things like Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, and Alzheimer's disease. Bacterial species found in the gut even produce neurotransmitters and neuromodulators directly. Different species have been found to produce GABA, serotonin, acetylcholine, and neuroadrenaline. They can also disrupt our production of these molecules. Germ-free mice have increased blood concentrations of the amino acid tryptophan. And tryptophan can be taken up through the blood-brain barrier where it's used in the production of serotonin. So disruption of tryptophan levels and the tryptophan metabolism have been observed in conditions of both the gut and the brain, things like irritable bowel syndrome and depression. What we have seen so far is evidence for a beautifully balanced set of relationships wherein our maker enables mothers to bless their children with a microbial inheritance that will begin colonization, train the immune system, and help digest breast milk. Then throughout development, the balanced interactions between different microbes control neurological development, levels of blood molecules, and even behavior. These results show that our health, physical and mental, are dependent on how we interact with the microbes around and within us. I see this as evidence that God has interwoven us into his creation. We are not above or beyond this world, but are instead intimately tied to it. We should cease to consider bacteria as dirty or dangerous and recognize that our very well-being depends on them. Really beginning to understand this set of interactions and codependencies reveals something critically important about how God has created us. Whether we are shaped gradually by the hand of God through a long process of evolution or created instantly from the dust of the ground, humans have been made totally dependent upon the other residents of this planet. We are earthlings, bound at the molecular level to other earthlings, and we likely cannot develop without our co-inhabitants of this skin. But the relationships between humans and microbes are just as broken as all of our other relationships. As hinted at in the descriptions I just provided, the microbiota seems to be involved in neurological and psychological conditions, including autism spectrum disorder, depression, and cognitive decline. Autism spectrum disorder, or ASD, is characterized by impaired social interactions and repetitive behaviors, and a common comorbidity for people with ASD is intestinal distress. As should be expected, individuals with ASD who suffer from intestinal symptoms also display measurable changes in the diversity of the gut microbiota. While it's certainly tempting to jump to the conclusion that the modified microbiota is causing the neurological condition, the bacteria present in these individuals are likely simply those that thrive best on that person's diet and in response to the medications they take. Some individuals with ASD, particularly those with intestinal distress, are likely to have non-standard diets, and they take antibiotics more frequently than people without the digestive and neurological conditions. However, some research shows that short-chain fatty acids, like those I just discussed, are actually able to induce autism-like symptoms in mice. There are even some studies that indicate that vancomycin, which is an antibiotic with limited intestinal uptake and mostly stays in the digestive tract, is able to relieve some autism-like symptoms in some individuals. These results are exciting. And the role of the microbiota in the disorder makes a certain sense when you think about the different rates of autism in different cultures. But patience and caution are needed while scientists track down the exact method of how a twisted relationship in our gut microbes would so drastically affect the neurological development, behavior, and human flourishing. Major depression affects about 7% of the American population over the age of 18. And there's strong evidence that, at least in rats, the microbiota has a role in depression. Maternal separation during infancy in adult rats will lead to adult rats that show depressive-like symptoms. However, if these rodents that have endured the separation are fed a potential probiotic, they reacted like rats that have been raised without the maternal separation in tests that evaluate for depression. And the probiotic-induced behavioral changes had molecular support. The probiotic also led to a normalization of the rat's tryptophan levels. And this example shows that gut microbiota may have a role in depression, and the symptoms of depression could possibly be relieved through changes to the microbiota. Aging causes significant cellular and functional changes in the brain. Advanced age also represents a time of substantial change in the gut microbiota. The elderly show a decreased diversity of bacteria in the colon, and decreased bacterial diversity is a hallmark for any host-microbiota relationship that is antagonistic. The changes in the microbiota are consequential. The elderly show decreased levels of tryptophan and short-chain fatty acids in the bloodstream. And as we discussed, both of these molecules have the ability to interact in the brain. The decrease in tryptophan is particularly interesting, as it's the precursor of serotonin in the brain and could explain some of the age-related changes to the areas of the brain dependent on serotonin, including the hippocampus and the frontal cortex. These results suggest that decreased microbial diversity in the gut at the end of life could reduce cognitive ability and other age-associated changes in the brain by altering the concentration of blood molecules. But understanding these connections gives us an opportunity to use them for our benefit. One recent review on this topic points out that, quote, feeding cognitively healthy elderly individuals a diet low in meat and meat products is associated with a subsequent increase in brain volume and cognitive function, end quote. Together, these three examples show that harmful relationship with our microbiota can have significant consequences for neurological development, psychological health, and cognitive ability. A disrupted relationship between host and gut microbes can induce a series of events that lead to changes in gut diversity, blood metabolites, neurotransmitter levels, gene expression in the brain, brain function, and finally behavior. So, how are we as Christians to respond to these results? First, I think we should foster diverse and healthful microbiota. Our bodies are not only temples to the Most High God, they are also homes for trillions of microbes. For those of us from a Reformed background, the Heidelberg Catechism in question and answer one reminds us that I am not my own, but belong body and soul in life and in death to my faithful Savior, Jesus Christ. And I would add to this that our bodies also belong to the members of our microbiota, and it is our responsibility to live lives that lets them thrive so that we might do so as well. Second, we need to be mindful of what we do that can disrupt the microbiota. C-sections, formula, antibiotics, these are redemptive gifts from God that are able to protect and permit life where it would otherwise be lost. But these gifts have consequences. Individuals born by C-section are not colonized by his or her mother's vaginal microbiota. Lactobacillus does not start the colonization process. And babies born by C-section have significant changes in the microbiota that last for years, the consequences of which are not yet known. Formula is a nutritious food source for infants and babies in their first years, but it cannot provide a lifetime's worth of antibodies that a mother has used to shape her microbiota over her lifetime. Antibiotics are a key tool in stopping dangerous bacterial infections, but they need to be used wisely. Long-term exposure to antibiotics causes changes in the microbiota that are long-lasting and potentially permanent. Third, it could be that God answers some of our most common prayers through the microbiota. The microbiota is a nearly invisible force that provides for our health, protects us from disease, and could even affect our thoughts. For this gift and for revealing this detail of his creation, we should praise him. But we also need to bear in mind the limitations of the field. As of yet, we do not know exactly which bacteria are needed for health. We do not know which antibiotics can disrupt mental health. And the molecular mechanisms behind most of these results are only partially understood in rodents, haven't even been glimpsed in human beings. For these advances, we need to wait with patience and humility. And until these mechanisms become clear, we can celebrate how the microbiota results published so far are completely in line with the truths of Genesis. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. We are deeply connected to the earth. We are utterly dependent upon relationships. Praise be to God.
Thank you for sparing us from any fecal transplants.
But you should be thinking about fecal transplants. What does that mean? Does that change behavior? I don't know.
We have time for a couple questions. We can start on the left here, sir.
Bruce, thanks. That was great.
Sure.
I'm kind of expecting you to recommend nutrient supplements.
No, I'm not sponsored. I don't do commercials. But I think there is something to be said for prebiotics. Now there's the idea that if you take certain food sources, it'll provide us, our digestive tract, with the kinds of sugars that'll shape the kind of bacteria we want. And so while buying some expensive probiotic might be the way we go eventually, things like eating bananas provide a lot of inulin. Inulin's a good food source for bacteroidetes and provides for a lot of health. There's something to be said there. Yeah. Who's pointing? You?
Back here. So we had a question about the media shaping, you know, science earlier in the talk. Mm-hmm. So are you excited or fearful that these, you know, preliminary and eventually more substantial results will be used to shape Christian diet fads?
Good call. That is a little worrisome. There's so much of this that is just unknown yet. It's definitely pointing in an interesting and exciting direction, but for human beings, we just don't have the answers yet. And so while eating a banana is not going to be bad for anybody, maybe investing large sums of money in these weird things, having these purges that just aren't scientifically supported, that is worrisome, right? Yeah. I do have a banana every morning. The cognitive decline stuff I talked about with the idea of the low fat or the low protein, low meat diets, it's tempting. There's lots of reasons we shouldn't eat red meat, right? It's expensive, takes a lot of water, it's rough on the environment. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are there ways to replenish the anaerobic microbiota in your gut that don't involve
I'm not signing up for a fecal transplant anytime soon. There's probiotics that provide some of those things.
But right? Most probiotics don't include antibiotics.
I know, but they're like prescription strength. VSL number 3 is a powerful prescription-only probiotic that provides hundreds of billions of microbes. Yeah.
One more. So have you ever thought about how Genesis talks about God creating us from the dust,
mm-hmm.
or the dust of the earth, and you know, one gram of dirt has about
huge number of bacteria in it.
Bacteria in it.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Yep. Yep. Very interesting.
I know that animal studies and a lot of the evidence down here, because we can control individual parameters, where mm-hmm. they're so varied and so mm-hmm. random in a way that you can't control and know that the cause you're seeing is mm-hmm. causing a certain fact, but where are we in relation to knowing certain things about relations to depression and autism and things like that, especially when the results are so encouraging.
There was a paper a couple of years ago that did actually try some of the probiotic stuff in depressed human women. And it showed some pretty significant results. And so these are all small studies. You know, I think they had 30 or 40 people in that study. But it just keeps being encouraging. Yeah.
One of the things that comes to mind in talking about the cesarean and breast milk versus formula is just, I guess my concern is a sort of blame.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering if you've thought of it.
No, absolutely. This is one of my fears in the whole topic. This lays out that the idea that formula and C-sections are not as good or whatever for as a natural delivery, vaginal delivery, and breast milk. Yeah, it has consequences.
Child.
And so am I like casting blame or something like that? But it does worry me about this. When I share these things with my students, I mean, I teach some of the stuff in a nursing class to a room largely populated by women. And I can see that sense of, oh, it's what I have to do, it's what's best. And, you know, I wanted to really emphasize what I said in there, that C-section is a redemptive gift that brings life. I'm not sure I would exist on this planet if not for C-sections. I'm very grateful for them. So they are able to provide life and protect life where it might otherwise be at risk. But it is important to point out that it's not equivalent to a vaginal birth. And so while it's certainly a good thing, it's not equal. Yeah.
I was wondering how much in this, as you've been studying this, has your sense of self changed?
Yes.
Are you largely thinking of yourself as host? Or are you thinking of all of these biota as you?
Yeah, that's
how much
it.
Is this you, and how much are you host to other?
Yeah, I mean, I joked that I am plural, and I think that maybe that's the closest to it, that I start to see myself not as a person who's being infected with these bacteria, but instead as a complex set of ecosystems that I have on me whole populations living in communication with one another.
Well, I am plural sounds better than I am legion.
That's right. That's right. How are we doing for time? Okay?
Yeah, we're all right.
Okay, good. No, yeah, I didn't look into it, but yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. Those vegetarian, no alcohol, yeah. It's good for us for all reasons besides the microbiota.
Some more questions in the back there?
So, I'm just wondering, I tend to be a total not germaphobe. take this in the right context, but I will eat food off the ground. right context. And whereas I think of my younger sister, who could be dying of thirst, she will not drink from the same water bottle. I have diseases and so on. And I think I'm quite healthy, and she tends to have certain, bowel.
Yeah.
So I wonder, is that quite possibly or just incidentally, could it be related?
It could very well be, right? For most of human history, horizontal transfer of digestive microbiota was a normal thing.
And
now let that sink in a second. Yeah, there's just the one water source. But that was a normal part of life for most of human history. And it's only very recently, particularly in a Western culture where we live in this incredibly clean environment, where we lack that opportunity. And so maybe part of the reason why there's so much diversity in gut microbiota between one individual and another in Western society is because we're so isolated from one another, like islands in the sea, where maybe a more traditional, more normal experience of human beings would be much more common sharing microbiota throughout the whole population.
Last question real quick over here.
Yeah. My wife's a therapist, and she's going to have a field day when I tell her about it. I have a question. The traditional sense was to separate the notion of body, soul, spirit, but obviously if we think about the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, they are interrelated, and Jesus made that very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about this in that context as well.
Mm.
How is this... I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said community. You know, we're talking about us as a body that's a community.
Yeah.
Have you had any inspirations about that connection between our bodies and our souls and our spirits?
I haven't had the big reveal yet, but I just want to think about it more. That's an interesting area that I think we need to think about more.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Again.